to another episode of Our Interesting Times. My guest this evening is Dr. Eric Karlstrom. Dr. Karlstrom is an emeritus professor of geography, California State University. His primary website is 9/11 New World Order. Dr. Karlstrom, how are you doing?
Very good, Tim. If you could turn yourself up a little bit, that would help.
Oh, you're having a problem with my volume there? Okay, let's try.
A little bit more, yeah.
How's that? Is that a little better?
A little better, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great, okay. Well, today, I want to talk about another part of your website here. It's the, of course, your website is 9/11 New World Order, and you have a lot of subcategories in there. And you've been doing, recently been doing several interviews regarding directed energy, geoengineering, and gang stalking. So we get into this gang stalking. Gang stalking is one of these things where it's kind of up there with, geoengineering and within the conspiracy realm, where it's maybe not a question of if it exists, it's a question of degrees and what its objective is. So gang stalking, and what place does it hold, or what's the role in the New World Order?
Well, this is a very important question. What we're dealing with here, Tim, and I apologize for the noise here. What we're dealing with is a very, very, very covert operation, destabilization program that is now worldwide. It goes by the term gang stalking, but it would perhaps be more accurately described as a actual military program, which is an outgrowth of previous programs like FBI's COINTELPRO, the CIA's MKUltra, and the CIA's Operation Phoenix, which was used to target civilians during the Vietnam War. And there are some excellent books that I have been learning from, and I'm trying to share what I'm learning with others through my websites. And of course, the one you mentioned is 911nwo.com. An outgrowth of that this fall was another site called gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. And so that one is actually includes a lot of the same material that is on my 911nwo.com website, but then is moving it in the direction of understanding this phenomenon of gang stalking. Again, it's a misnomer. It's not a bunch of gangs in L.A. that are stalking civilians. No, it's actually a coordinated program. Much again like the Phoenix program of Vietnam, which targeted the civilian infrastructure for the Viet Cong, but in fact got into targeting and terrorizing the civilian population as a way of controlling it. And now what we see is this program has gone global. There are some excellent books that I can recommend people to look at if they'd like. I've gotten a lot of information from Mark M. Rich's book, New World War, Revolutionary Methods for Political Control. And I've taken a lot of the information out of that book and put them in posts on these two websites. One post is a bestiary of terms for the new war. If you look at the alphabet soup terms that Rich has done a lot of research here, the alphabet soup of terms such as 4GW, which means fourth generation warfare. This is what we're looking at, actually. The military is using these forms of, what they are is a PSYOP and electronic warfare and all kinds of covert methodologies as political psychological warfare against individuals to destroy them, basically to break their will and to modify their behavior, first of all, to eventually to terminate them through torture. What we're dealing with is no touch torture, silent kill, soft kill, slow kill, non-lethal weapons is a term that they use, NLW. The more you get into this, the vaster is the literature. As I say, the Pentagon has been funding research in these directed energy weapons for numerous decades now, and there are many patents that show what has and I've got these listed also in a post, pertinent patents, and so the I've learned a lot, and I believe that I actually am a target, and have been targeted with not only the psyops aspect, but also with the energy, electronic weaponry, directed energy weapons. I'll stop there. If you would like to take this in a certain direction, Tim.
Okay, so gang stalking, or the sort of psychological warfare that we're talking about, it can range anywhere from sort of various psyops, whether it's intimidation or mind games, breaking into someone's home, switching their furniture around, getting into their mail, making their lives difficult by disrupting their daily activities, to targeting them with exotic weaponry, that can disrupt their bodily functions and make them impossible for them to function properly, which would be very helpful if you're trying to neutralize a dissident or a troublemaker or a whistleblower. Make them appear to be insane, which is an old tactic, an old Soviet tactic. But it's a way to neutralize it, a troublemaker, a dissident, or whistleblower. Make them appear insane, isolate them from their family. But also, to target them, you can eventually kill them with some of these weapons. As you say, there are patents for these weapons, and I've seen some of these weapons even on NBC News or ABC News, where they talk about crowd control and hitting people with heat weapons and things like that. All this is very disturbing. It's also to the average Joe out there, it's also very strange. So it's hard for people to believe this is going on. But there is a history for this. Do you want to go maybe, whether other countries or in the United States itself, kind of build the case for this type of behavior on the part of whether government agencies or even the private firms like Blackwater or other like, they can contract out to these things, particularly with all the money that's gone into the national security state in the past 15 years. So what examples do we have in history for this type of behavior?
Tim, are you there?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, you just dropped out for a second. Yeah, you seem to have a pretty good grasp of this whole thing. It's very confusing. I think that probably there are many, many, many tens and hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people that are targeted globally. In 2004, there was a guy named David Kilcullen, who is from Australia, actually, who was the top anti-terrorism advisor for Obama and Bush, and also General Petraeus, who advocated in a paper for a global Phoenix program. Now, of course, the war in Vietnam was a disaster in many ways, but from the point of view of the military leaders, the silver lining was this Phoenix program, which was horrendously evil, because they would CIA would put out a list of individuals of interest, and then the military go in and kill them with these hunt and kill operations that people like John Kerry and Bob Kerry, who are now senators and secretaries of state and things like that, were actually involved in these programs, and they were the slaughter of civilians. And of course, they just blow them away, with all kinds of weaponry. And this was considered a success by our military. And now they want to go global with this program. Now, most of the TIs, that is to say targeted individuals in the world, do not know that they are targets. So that's one of the reasons why I think this kind of program is very important. Your life descends into kind of a hellish isolation, deprivation of sleep, deprivation of all social contacts. The goal is, you start to read through these military position papers, is to degrade, to deny, to destroy, all of a sudden now the civilians are the enemy. And many of the targets, like myself, would be people who perhaps are perceived as dissidents. I mean, I came out in 2002 with a paper, which I put my name on, and I was a professor of geography at the time, and it was called Reflections on the Origins of 911 three scenarios, 9/11. And of course, I concluded, you know, just from a geopolitical point of view, that it had to be an inside job. Since then, I've, you know, got this huge 911nwo.com website, which proves it a thousand ways from up and down that it was an inside job. Although, you know, orchestrated by the neocons, of course, and as an excuse to invade this series of countries in the Middle East, which is basically what, you know, David Ben-Gurion called for when the State of Israel was established in 1948. And an Israeli journalist by the name of Yinon wrote a paper in 1992, again calling for the creation of a greater Israel in the Middle East, which would extend from the Nile in Egypt, the Nile River in Egypt, over to the Tigris and Euphrates in Iraq, as per the Rothschild-designed flag of the State of Israel, which shows a blue bar at the top and a blue bar at the bottom. And those, of course, represent those two rivers, the Nile and the Tigris-Euphrates. And, of course, that's exactly what's happened. And the beneficiaries, of course, of this Operation 9/11 were the DOD, the Department of Defense. Their budget increased from about $300 billion per year to, you know, over $600 or $700 billion per year, $800 billion for a while. And we've gotten this series of wars, which have benefited mainly, you know, Israel and the oil companies, and certainly haven't done any good for America and the world. And then also as a result of the 9/11 operation, which was totally scripted out by the neocon Jews of the Bush and Obama administrations, is this establishment, national security establishment on steroids, in which we have the Department of Homeland Security fusion centers, and we have the FBI's terrorism fusion centers. I can't remember the term right now, but these mimic what was going on in the Phoenix program back in Vietnam, wherein these centers would coordinate activities from many different agencies, anti-insurgency, counterinsurgency, anti-terrorism. What they're doing is targeting the civilian population and giving them, you know, a name. We'll call them insurgents now, you know. Like, I'm sure I'm considered an insurgent now because I, you know, I guess I'm a truth teller, you know. And of course, it was Goebbels, the head of the propaganda ministry in the Nazi German regime, who said truth is the greatest enemy of the state. And that's where we are. It's a battle for perceptions and the perception of legitimacy. And of course, the U.S. military, what it's doing is not legitimate, nor is what the U.S. government's doing. It's criminal. It violates all, you know, all principles of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. But of course, they get with the fact that our media is controlled now by six Jewish corporations, Jewish owned corporations. 95% of the world's media is owned by these six corporations. So, and that itself, our media is propaganda. It's a psychological operation. It's what the Nazis called worldview warfare. So, you know, to break out of that, then, people like me, who the military would target now as an insurgent, would put out information on the internet with my websites, and I've got five of them. Then, of course, this is countered now by the state's resources. I have a slight revelation I'd like to make, Tim, and this has come to me just recently. I think it's a huge revelation. When the military talks in terms of fourth generation warfare, 4GW, let me just define that for you here. And this is right out of Thomas. 4GW is a form of political information warfare waged against civilians by a state or other entity. It utilizes civilians and the military. Now, you're dealing with, you know, citizen spies enlisted under the Department of Homeland Security now. And a 2003 article in the Boston Globe said DHS, Department of Homeland Security, which was formed right after 9/11, envisions having 100 million civilian spies enlisted with their program. Well, the Stasi, East German state security police, had 1 out of 6.5 civilians in East Germany that were citizen spies harassing and spying on their neighbors. Well, DHS wants to one out of three. Anyway, this program uses civilians and the military as a form of irregular warfare. Indeed, all of society to target civilian adversaries, also known as domestic state enemies, insurgents, extremists, non-state actors, cells of fanatics, and, of course, citizen terrorists who value national sovereignty or pose some other perceived threat to the state's interest. Anyone disseminating information contrary to the state's national security interest may become an enemy. The goal of the new war is the psychological collapse of the new enemies using a combination of tactics. Defeating the new enemies involves the synchronized use of non-lethal directed energy weapons, isolation, deprivation, and psyops against individuals and groups, also known as TA, or targeted audience, which includes TIs, targeted individuals. 4GW is more or less synonymous with other terms that the military has lots and lots of paper trail on, called unconventional warfare, UW, irregular warfare, IR, or IW, asymmetric warfare, AW, low intensity conflict, LIC, military operations other than war, MOOTW, network centric warfare, NCW. This new war involves international interagency cooperation between the military, federal and local law enforcement, non-governmental organizations, NGOs, intergovernmental organization, IGOs, the civilian population, private voluntary organizations, PVOs. You see, as I say, the answer, my friend, is in the alphabet soup, and private government contractors. This multinational force, MNF, involves NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and the UN, and is termed CMO, Civilian Military Operations. Okay, so what's my revelation? My revelation is that 9/11 itself was an example of a PSYOP, and I wrote this in a 2006 paper called 9/11 was a PSYOP and an inside job, and it involved electronic warfare. It involved Tesla technology. And here I refer to the work of Dr. Judy Wood, who has a PhD in materials engineering and interferometry. She understands how different wavelengths of energy can interfere with each other to produce radically new results. And it's her contention that 9/11 itself was not a new Pearl Harbor. It was a new Hiroshima, a new form of tactical weaponry, in other words, directed energy weapons, was demonstrated to the world, and on a colossal scale. So this was a self-inflicted wound, although I think Israel was certainly prominently involved. It was a self-inflicted wound that was designed, again, to, justify all these wars in the Middle East and this national security establishment on steroids, according to Mark M. Rich. We've taken $7 trillion since 9/11 and taken it out of social services and put it into this national security establishment. So we are a police state, a covert police state on steroids, involving all aspects of society. And it seems that enemy number one is civilians. So, now that we've used the largest military in the history of the world, and we have our bases in 160 countries or something like that, now that we've used it to, subject the world to American power and capitalistic requirements, which is turn over your resources and your cheap labor to us or else, now that those countries have been more or less conquered, with some notable exceptions, Russia and China, now the operation is to go after non-cooperating citizens. And, of course, we saw the precursors of this in Oliver North's Operation Rex, which set up the FEMA camps in the 80s, as well as the Jade Helm exercises in 2015 and then the UX exercise in 2016. We see the military's fixation on the problem of dissidents, on the problem of people who still can use their minds and think and communicate. So this becomes the enemy number one, and gang stalking is the way to take them out. Now, I can't over exaggerate the amount of pain that is being inflicted on these individuals by our military using our tax dollars. So again, this is so anti-constitutional, so anti-American, that if and when the word gets out that the military is doing this, we in cooperation with the citizenry and the local law enforcement and the intelligence agencies, blah, 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 they will lose legitimacy, and something's got to change.
Now, one thing, it's good that you mentioned the Phoenix program, because that was a prototype. The Vietnam War itself was used, one of the reasons for the Vietnam War was used as a testing ground for various weapon platforms and tactics and psychological warfare. And what developed out of that, of course, was the Phoenix program. And Douglas Valentine has written a book about the Phoenix program. I think you've referenced him in a couple of your interviews. And he has a recent book out that also writes about that. He writes about that a lot in his recent book, The CIA as Organized Crime. And he's mentioned how much of the Phoenix program's ideas have been incorporated into the Department of Homeland Security, particularly the fusion centers that you mentioned. One disturbing fact about the Department of Homeland Security is that a consultant was one Marcus Wolf, a former Stasi officer.
Exactly.
So, I mean, so we have CIA being set up, particularly the Soviet desk, you know, by Galen and these former Nazis or ex-Nazis or, you know, I guess emigre Nazis, rather, forming the CIA desk, in the Soviet desk of the Central Intelligence Agency at the dawn of the Cold War. And now, in the end of the Cold War, we have, of course, East German communists helping designing our domestic police state.
Well, you know, this is absolutely, you're right on. But it's deeper than that. I mean, the neocon conservative Jewish element, which, you know, of course, wrote the PNAC documents, the Project for New American Century think tank, which set out George W. Bush's domestic and foreign policy. These people, you know, who had infiltrated the Republican Party, start going back to Reagan and even Nixon. They were former Trotskyites. Yeah. And they, you know, this, you know, you're talking to Irving Kristol, and these guys were very, very far on the left, but they decided, well, they need to infiltrate the Republican Party too. So they all of a sudden became rhinos, you know, Republicans in name only. And then they got control of the Republican apparatus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're dealing with the same people, a very small number of people who have hijacked the American government for their own purposes. Yeah, and this, of course,
and one point is, yeah, Trotsky himself was an agent of the West going in to destabilize Russia.
From New York City, his name is Bronstein.
Yes.
And yes, that's right. You know, so what we have is the Soviet Bolshevik Revolution being, you know, financed and supported by the world's greatest capitalists in Wall Street and the city of London and Germany, et cetera. And then this reign of terror, you know, for, you know, 80 years in the Soviet Union, which they developed the Cheka police and the Red Terror, you know, again, in the gulags of Russia would have been, you know, 80% staffed with Jews. And then, of course, then all the communist satellite countries like East Germany and Hungary and Poland, they all had their versions of this, this national security state, which is totally repressive and hellish. And again, now these same forces which created this Soviet revolution have grasped the United States. And, you know, we are controlled. I see us more and more as the United States of Israel, the United States of Israel. You know, they control all elements of power. And even though it's a relatively small percentage of our population, you know, they say 2.5%, although I think it's much greater than that. But they control the money, and through the money and the networks of influence, they control the major levers of power. And so, again, the revelation that I have here, Tim, is that, OK, 9-1-1 itself, 9-11, is a act of terrorism, state sponsored, false flag, made in America, synthetic terror. You know, use of violence to obtain a politically objective, which it's in DOD statements. And then following up on that, you know, was the justification for this national security establishment on steroids with DHS and now the coordination of all, you know, the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, and all the alphabet soup agencies, including local law enforcement, including the civilian population. And now we just have a continuation of the same dynamic, which again is 4GW, fourth generation warfare, unconventional warfare, regular warfare, against the civilian population of America and the world. So my revelation then, what came to me is, you know, 911 is a combination of PSYOP and electronic warfare. Well, so is gang stalking, a combination of PSYOP and electronic warfare. And if we look in the military documents over the last several decades, we'll find the terms. If we look in the patents, we'll find the inventions. If we look at the black budget projects of the Pentagon, we'll find where the funding came from for these things. So, you know, this is not a conspiracy theory. I mean, it's outrageous to call it a conspiracy theory. This is reality. I mean, all of these patents, all of these documents that are military documents, all of these think tank position papers, you know, from RAND and CFR and PNAC and places like that, they lay it out. They tell us what they're going to do, and then they do it. And the only way they can get away with it, of course, is they have almost 100% media complicity. And our media itself is propaganda. It's a PSYOP. And so Americans, you know, what they want to do, of course, with this program is once they've perfected it, still, I think, somewhat in the testing stages, we're all guinea pigs now in this system. They're going to extend it to the world's population. And so those of us then who are targeted, in a sense, are a slight buffer between the psychopaths who are wielding this power and the civilian population of the world. So, in a way, you know, I'm honored. In a real perverse way, I'd rather be in the position I'm in than one of the oblivious many, or certainly one of the perpetrators, and to still have a mind to be able to understand these things and to try to explain them, I think is, you know, it's a mix. It's a blessing in disguise, in a sense.
Now, you mentioned, you know, the creation of these intelligence services and police states in the communist bloc in the 1940s, when the Soviet Union took control of Eastern Europe. Of course, the rise of the Cheka, then the NKVD, then KGB in the Soviet Union. Of course, in the West, the supposed reaction to these things in the Cold War was the development, or the, I guess, the increasing power of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or, of course, of the creation of the Central Intelligence Agency with the National Security Act of 1947. And, well, we have an example here of a form of gang stalking in the Cold War period with COINTELPRO in Operation Chaos, correct? So this is, we have a history here of these type, you know, how they created things like the Seminese Liberation Army in conjunction with the California government and the Department of Corrections with the Ronald Reagan administration, where they created this radical group to destroy, I guess, leftist opposition to the establishment in the name of, you know, I guess, the Leninist strategy of the best way to be the opposition, I'm best to control the opposition, to become the opposition. At the same time, you create a sort of a strategy of tension, because with these radical groups, you terrorize the majority, you know, the silent majority, which is sort of, which changes the politics, or helps shape the politics of the day, which it did in the 60s. You help elect people like Richard Nixon. We had Gladio in Europe in the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, which is all well documented. And all these things can, you know, these are examples of the very thing you're citing. It's just been refined along with the development of technology. Is that a correct analysis?
Absolutely, Tim. You're right on. And I'm glad you brought up MH Chaos, because I was around. You know, I was in college during the Vietnam War, and I was vaguely aware that the CIA and other federal agencies were spying on us, the students. So, you know, and then you get into the whole, you know, David McGowan scenario, weird scenes from Laurel Canyon, where you realize that the rock stars of our age, the ones from Laurel Canyon, you know, the famous ones, you know, the Mamas and the Papas and Frank Zappa and so many of these people, their parents were, you know, military and intelligence, and they themselves were probably mind controlled at very young ages so that they would be useful to the power elite. And then they became our stars. So like you say, you know, the best way to control the opposition is to lead it. And now, in, you know, hindsight, it turns out that much of the hippie movement, which was actually an effort to discredit the legitimate anti-Vietnam War protesters, which were coming out of our universities, both faculty and students. Then, of course, they imported drugs, sex, and rock and roll en masse in order to, you know, make middle America think that the youth had gone berserk and discredit them. And of course, to divide and conquer as per usual. And you're a little young, but I mean, when I was in college, the fissure between middle America and the youth was really quite phenomenal. We had almost a civil war between, you know, the long haired hippies and the you know, the short haired, you know, guys, you know, or middle aged and above who, you know, had World War II generation. So, yeah, and MH Chaos was a program in which the CIA was spying on our campuses, you know, taking names, just like the Phoenix program, which was going on at the same time in Vietnam. And they actually had, you know, small command and control centers with files on us, being the students, with generals, you know, looking at photos and whatnot. So even then, in 68, 69, the youth of America, of which I was one at the time, were being identified, surveilled, and to some extent targeted. And as you say, they were creating these subculture fringe groups so that they could destroy them, like the Symbionese Liberation Army with Patty Hearst. And they certainly destroyed the Black Panthers, whose goal was FBI, COINTELPRO destroyed them. The goal of Black Panthers was simply to have the Black subculture more, you know, self-sufficient and independent. And able to advance their own interests. Well, this was not deemed acceptable. You know, they had to be under the thumb of the power structure. So, you know, FBI killed 28 Black Panthers, and Black Panthers killed zero FBI, 28-0 in favor of the FBI in those years. So much of what we're seeing now has its roots not only in, you know, communist Soviet Union and the communist East Germany, et cetera, but also in the Cold War period. So I think your analysis is right on. Again, this is not a conspiracy theory. This thing has huge legs. And then you add the technologies involved with directed energy weapons. Now we're talking Tesla technology. Tesla was, you know, over 100 years ahead of his time back in the early 20th century. And, you know, he's the guy who invented wireless. He's the guy who invented alternative AC current, which brought us into the electrical age, and many, many 700 patents. A genius from Serbia who came to America and was funded by J.P. Morgan. He had a vision of free energy available to all people. He built a Wardenclyffe transmitter. He says there's energy everywhere in the universe. All we need to do is, you know, tap into it. And he built this tower back in Wardenclyffe, which was deconstructed around World War I. J.P. Morgan pulled the funding when he realized that, you know, if it's free, he can't meter it. Mm-hmm. Tesla coil was invented, and he did all these experiments in Colorado Springs and demonstrated that these wireless forms of, you know, electrical transmission were possible. And now, of course, we all use them with our cell phones, etc., our Gwen towers, our satellites. And now we're immersed in about 200 million times the background energy of these wavelengths of energy. See, that's what's so amazing about the directed energy weapons. It's invisible and it's deniable. So it gives the military a whole slew of which including wire, etc., in which they can say, oh, well, no, we didn't do it. It's something else, you know. So what we're talking about really is lasers. We're talking about microwaves. We're talking about radio frequencies. We're talking about sonic weapons, ultrasound, infrasound, acoustic weapons, and lasers. These have all been weaponized by our military over the past several decades. And not just our military, certainly the Russians and other military, and the Israelis are all over this thing. This is invisible warfare, and you can't see these wavelengths and frequencies, but they, where everything in the universe has, that's, you know, that's alive, or certainly everything that's alive on the planet, you know, has electromagnetic energy. Our brains have put out a unique, each one of our brains puts out a unique fingerprint of electromagnetic frequencies, which our military can now identify as a fingerprint and follow us around. It's called remote neural monitoring, EEG heterodyning, electroencephalography heterodyning. I mean, the technology of the military is, you know, at least 50 to 100 years ahead of what people can even imagine. So this is a huge rabbit hole, and I must admit to, you know, I have to be a little bit humble. I was a geography professor, and we're getting into the realm of very, very classified high-tech physics here. And I'm, you know, still trying to grasp with it, you know, and understand it myself, and put up posts on my websites that help people to explain it. I'm not a, you know, is not a technical expert at these things. But if you get some military people on there, you know, like John Alexander, who's done so much work with this non-lethal weapons and remote viewing and that sort of thing, and getting into the occult. I mean, the military has gone over to the dark side here and has for decades. Alexander has a PhD in thanatology, which is this scientific study of death. Well, you know, these non-lethal weapons can be tuned and scaled up so that they become lethal, and they can take out anybody at any time, you know, with weapons that can target, say, the frequencies of the heart and give you a heart attack or, you know, create cancer and that sort of thing. So I'm not trying to just, you know, promote fear. I'm trying to promote understanding and say, you know, the enemy has been redefined so that it's us. And the military has technology which most humans have no way of understanding. You know, it's magic as far as most of us would go. But again, I think knowledge is power to some extent. So to the extent that you and I can understand it and share our understandings with others, this gives people a fighting chance. I personally think that in the battle for legitimacy, we will win. I mean, we have to win because the alternative is so Orwellian. Then you've cemented in the Orwellian. Of course, the whole goal is Winston Smith has to get reeducated so that he, you know, subscribes to doublethink, 2 + 2 = 6 or whatever the power elite says. You know, that's just like saying Osama bin Laden did 9/11 and humans are causing global warming and the war on terror is, you know, against Islamic extremists. Well, you know, the CIA created these quote unquote Islamic extremist terrorists, you know, with the Mujahideen, the ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, all these things have been created. And F. William Engdahl has a great book giving the history of that now called The Lost Hegemon. But deeper than that, of course, is the manipulation of all the Christian versus the Islamic world by the Jewish power structure. They basically want us to kill each other off, you know, so that they get the whole world and they get their Jewish utopia. That's you know, that's who has power now. And that's what their goal is to control everything and everyone. And the Goyim, the Gentiles, are going to have to be enslaved and or killed off so that they can have all the wealth of the world. I mean, these websites that I have, you know, give the context for these things. These things are not operating out of a context. You know, it's not just a few generals with, some resources and some high-tech weaponry. This is a huge system, and we have to try to understand who's controlling it and why.
Yes. It does appear to be, a little bit Talmudic, I guess you could say.
Oh, absolutely. Now, well, see, that's what most people don't understand. I mean, most people think that the Jews believe in the Old Testament. Well, that's not true. The sacred texts for the Jews are the Talmud, which is the teachings of the elders, well, you know, which says it's okay to have sex with 3-year-old girls and less, you know, and 9-year-old boys and under, and it's okay to rob, steal, and kill Gentiles because they're beasts, and only the Jews are chosen, and they're of God, and blah, 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 all this racist, hateful stuff. And then of course, they have the Kabbalah, which is a system of Babylonian black magic and Satanism. And so you put these two together, and you're dealing with a religion that worships Satan and is doing his bidding, just like the Bible says, the synagogue of Satan. So if you, you know, if you go back to what Jesus said about the Pharisees, all of that stuff is extremely appropriate. But most Christian pastors and priests won't touch that stuff because it's not politically correct. You know, he said, you are of your father, the devil. You know, you're vipers and hypocrites, a race of vipers, you know, a generation of snakes. Well, that's unfortunately seems to be the case. I mean, I didn't grow up with a prejudice. I was brought up not to be prejudiced, you know, but I think in discovering the truth, we have to go where it leads. You know, we can't say, okay, well, I have to stop there because that's not politically correct. Well, of course, that's why all these politically correct, you know, sanctions are there to keep the truth covered, you know. So.
Now, I mean, I guess what I would say is that I think the vast majority of Jewish people are under rabbinical tyranny, and they themselves are being tricked.
I think that's the case.
Which, but, when you talk about, I think he's talking to the Pharisees and this sort of rabbinical dictatorship that developed after the dispersion of the Jewish people and the development of the Talmud, which I think was codified like in the 7th or 6th century or something. But it's an attempt to manipulate them as well as the rest of humanity to maintain this sort of elite outlook on life.
I think you can say that. You know, yeah. Tex Mars is one of my favorite radio talk show guys. He does a powerofprophecy.com show. He's written about 50 books, including several about this whole issue. And he really nails it like it is. And again, he's a former Air Force officer, 22 years in the Air Force. And he says, you know, I mean, the goal, of course, by this group of psychopaths, generational Satanists to a large extent, is world control. They want their heaven here. They don't believe, you know, really in an afterlife. And they think Christians are stupid to, you know, put their hope in an afterlife. They want all the material wealth here and now. And that's, you know, in lots and lots of their documents. And what he says is that basically, yeah, okay, well, it is the leadership that's pushing this. But the rest of them pretty much are going along because they get so much. So you know, you're looking at this whole Khazarian issue where supposedly 95% of the modern Jews are actually from, you know, the ancient kingdom of Khazaria, and they would have imported Judaism as their religion. They are not associated with the old Hebrews genetically. And these are the people that have conned the world into saying, you know, God wants us to go back to our homeland. Well, their homeland is Khazaria, not Jerusalem and not Palestine. But bottom line is that they've pulled this con on themselves and on the world. And I think, you know, they do control the money system with the Rothschilds being the king of the Jews and everything like that since the late 1700s. And I think most Jews kind of go along with it in the sense that they're not advancing it, but they're supporting it. And if the Mossad calls them up and say, okay, we want you to render a service for your godfather, you know, Israel, you know, the average rank and file Jew is going to do it. And that's that gives the what we call the Sionim. Which are these Jewish secret spies, which they've always formed a network of Sionim around the world.
Yeah, they openly talk about their loyalty, their primary loyalty being to the Jewish state. And you mean you have people like Arnon Milchin receiving an award from Israel for engaging in espionage, helping them acquire nuclear weapons, supposedly.
Sure.
You had, you know, the illegal arms shipments after World War II, which people like Hank Greenspun, that newspaper editor out in Las Vegas, who was fined $10,000 for being involved in this illegal arms shipments to help fund the Israeli fighters, the Zionist fighters in Israel, to, you know, deliver a fait accompli, which led to the creation of the Israeli state. He openly bragged about his, you know, his service to the to Israel, a foreign government. So that is a problem. And you do have a notion of this sort of, you know, they say dual loyalty. I say dual loyalty might be an improvement.
Well, yeah, and of course, yeah. The neocons, a lot of them have dual citizenship with Israel and the United States, and guys like Rahm Emanuel would have fought in the Israeli army, and yet here he was chief of staff under Obama, and now he's the whatever mayor of Chicago, and these people, and of course, he was a magnate on Wall Street, so these people, you know, they jump back and forth into positions of power to advance this common cause, which is always the cause of Israel. They don't give a fig about the United States, except that the United States is doing its little in their utopia. And when Americans figure out that we've been hoodwinked by these people, and I think hoodwinked is the right word, because that is a word, say, the Jewish nations would use. We've been tricked. We've been duped. We've been fooled. We've made fools of. Hopefully there's enough, you know, gray matter collectively in the American consciousness that if this sinks in, they might just throw off the Whore of Babylon, as some people refer to the Israeli Jews, and we're the beast being written, if you want to go with that, you know, metaphor in the Revelation. But yeah, we're totally co-opted and controlled as a nation. And
a huge portion of the Christian community, particularly the Protestants, have been buffaloed, you know, with the Schofield Bible, and that dates back to
absolutely.
Yeah, and that, there's a huge that was, of course, funded by Untermeyer and the Jewish oligarchs and Jacob Schiff in New York, and that, of course, that coincides with the Balfour Declaration, U.S. entry into World War I, and also its entry into World War II, because all that was necessary for the creation of Israel. So.
Yeah, you understand. I mean, this is not something you're going to get from the media. You know, you're not going to get it from the mainstream media, because, again, that's owned by these very individuals. And this, you know, kind of, you might call it a criminal syndicate. You know, it's a world criminal syndicate. And I think that there is a lot of psychopathy involved in this syndicate. I think that they think it's in their Talmud that, you know, all Gentiles are beasts and you can rob, steal, and kill from Gentiles. They don't consider us to be human. So therefore, you know, get us out of the way and use us as guinea pigs in these, you know, gang stalking programs, etc. You know, the military has tested, you know, done these experiments in the Cold War of over 500,000. That's admitted, you know, kinds of radiation experiments.
Yeah. You mentioned the word magic, and that's interesting because you have Arthur C. Clarke's observation that there's no real difference between any advanced form of technology and magic.
The minds of the people. Yeah.
Because if you're among the profane and they're dealing with occulted technology, and science itself has always been somewhat of a control mechanism. It goes back to the Royal Society and its sort of its Freemasonic Rosicrucian origins. And it's all about controlled information, you know, special information, insider information, whether it's financial or technological, so you can appear as a god or as magic or just to pull a con on somebody. It's not a coincidence that, you know, George Soros' book on finance is called The Alchemy of Finance. Alchemy has always been somewhat of a con, right? It's always a con. I can do this for you. You know, I can turn base metal into gold. Only problem is if you can do that, then gold becomes a base metal. You know, but it's always been a trick. You know,
and 9/11 was a trick. 9/11 was a trick. In fact, there was a lot of symbology in that. If you read a couple books, The Most Dangerous Book in the World by J.K. Bain or whatever his name is, you know, talks about all the Masonic symbolism, not only in the 9/11 operation, but also in the JFK assassination. Yes. So you have a occult power structure, which you can call it Judeo-Masonic Satanist, if you want, for a better term. But it involves a lot of these secret societies like the Rosicrucians and everything. And I'm really glad to hear you say these things, because it takes a depth of understanding to, you know, to peel back the the curtain and to start to see who the wizard is, you know, and then you start to see that, oh, wow, this is the wizard, you know. And, yeah, you mentioned Soros, you know. How is this guy who's a Czechoslovakian Hungarian Jew who was a Nazi during World War II and now is, you know, had inordinate control and power over the American political scene with his MoveOn.org. And, of course, I think that the message there is move on from 9/11, pay no attention to this and keep on, you know, going forward. And, of course, he was the brains behind the Hillary campaign and the money. and the Black Lives Matter, and you name it. I mean, these billionaire Jews, you know, they have power, and for whatever reason, nobody's going after them. Nobody's assassinating these guys, which of course they deserve richly. And not that I'm calling for that, but you know, I mean, they talk about assassinating Trump, but they don't talk about assassinating Soros. And I mean, this is nuts. I mean, why should we have this Jewish billionaire exerting such power over, and Rupert Murdoch, and you know, all the others? Again, Tex Mars is very good on this. There's a group called MEGA, these 10 richest billionaire Jews that get together and meet in New York City and, you know, decide what's going to happen next. You know, it's kind of an informal Bilderberg group. So, yeah, we get down to the hidden structures of power and realize that it is above our elected officials. It's above our president. And it's jerking us around. And I think people are waking up to these things, but what they need to wake up is this gang stalking electronic warfare psyops thing, which I am now on the case. You know, I'm writing articles about this. I'm reading, and this is where my research has led me. I mean, obviously, the global warming thing is a hoodwink, and I've established that on my naturalclimatechange.org, and that is my field as a physical geographer, to know something about climates of the past and how natural climates change. But you know, that's kind of a done deal. I mean, that's a pathetic hoodwink, which no longer seems to be functional. Even Trump, you know, says it's nonsense. But then the 911 hoodwink, you know, a lot, we're making inroads on that. Now the gang stalking and the PSYOP thing, if we can turn this over, if we can expose this, I think then, you know, then the power structure is going to have some real problems.
Yeah. Well,
because they're killing us. They're torturing us. They are killing good people. I mean, we can go through the list. I mean, Gloria Naylor was a wonderful black author. 1996 is her book about her own stalking, which started in 1996. She understood what was happening to her. And now, this last year in the fall, she died of a heart attack, probably induced. Edward McGowan, David McGowan, the guy who wrote The Weird Scenes from Laurel Canyon, it died too young of cancer. Gary Webb shot himself twice in a suicide, you know, who exposed Iran, the CIA's crack importation during the Iran-Contra, bringing cocaine and crack, you know, from Central America into L.A. and San Francisco. So, you know, they're targeting the dissidents, and they're targeting people who have no connection to anything. They're just almost randomly getting people out.
And the Rolling Stone reporter, what was his name? Michael?
Yeah, Michael Hastings, most recently. Yeah.
His car seemingly blew up because he was drunk or something. It turns out he wasn't.
I think his car was steered. You know, you get these new automobiles, they can be commandeered, just like an airplane can be commandeered, you know, remotely.
Yeah, they're and smart. Steered. They're smart.
Yeah, smart car. Yeah, and someone else can take control of that smart car and put it right into a tree, which apparently is what happened. And, of course, Mike Hastings was exposing things the CIA did not want to see exposed. So the CIA, I think, you know, in my own research, you know, the CIA has always served Wall Street and the power elite, not the people. And when they talk about national security, you know, just move along, man. This is a national security issue.
Yeah.
Well, they're talking about what they're doing is protecting, you know, their own interests and protecting their own criminal activities. So this national security term or national interest has always been kind of a misnomer, a way to hoodwink the American people to protect the power structure against the American people.
Yeah, well, they don't want accountability or oversight, and that's right. One way to cover that up. It's under the veil of national security. It's the biggest con out there. But you mentioned the case of Gloria Naylor, which is interesting because it suggests that she ran afoul of the system just because she offended a neighbor.
Yes.
Knew somebody. And this is how these systems work, by the way.
Take it a little bit further. I mean, I've read the book. It's a brilliant book. It's very short and simple and direct, and it's fictionalized. But anybody who's a TI would know that it's actually very descriptive of her own stalking experience on her first year. Basically, it started when she's an author with some success, a black woman. and a book that I think is something with the name Dreams in it. But anyway, she bought a house where she could ride down on one of these barrier islands off of North Carolina, I believe. And her neighbor across the street was a tall Jewish lady who had a bunch of cats. And her bunch of cats came in and tore up her garden or something. And she went over with a cup of coffee to try to be friendly with her neighbor. And her tall Jewish neighbor got pissed off at her. And then she called her brother, who happened to be high up in the NSA. And she hounded him until he put her on a list where all of a sudden it was Operation Destroy Gloria Naylor. And this is well described in the book. And, you know, pretty soon there's a Mossad operative who's in charge of the whole thing. And, it just is comedy of errors. But, once you're into one of these operations now, it's war. Now you're at war. The whole apparatus can be brought down on one innocent, unsuspecting civilian. Unfortunately for them, Gloria Naylor was very, very, very smart. Yeah. And she figured out what was happening to her. And anybody who's a TI should read that book. Because all this technology was available in 1996, and that 21 years ago, this has been around.
Now, one thing you think this through, how this might have went down, is she has this neighbor of hers has a brother who has some influence at the National Security Agency, who I guess he has either the Rolodex or who knows people who to call, and he's aware of a test program for gang stalking, supposedly to target enemies of the free world, terrorists, bad guys. So this is how you get people involved in this, because they think they're fighting bad guys. Then you say, well, since we're testing this program, we have to do random testing to see how effective it is. Well, since my sister is having trouble with this neighbor, let's pick her as a test subject, random test subject. Although it may appear random, and although how awful that is, that's an example how someone who knows somebody can use this infrastructure, this system, to target you for doing something as audacious as walking over and trying to convince this lady to stop having her cats pee in her garden.
That's exactly right. And, apparently lots of people have gotten onto these lists, these terrorist watch lists or notification lists, or you can call them death lists or whatever, because these are terminal experiments. I mean, you get in the program and they're going to, keep going until you're dead.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to get out of these programs. Well, my way is, the only strategy I can think of is we've got to expose their illegitimacy. We've got to scream it from the rooftops that our own government is involved in killing Americans. Well, of course, the Declaration of Independence says governments are instituted among men to protect our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And when governments become destructive of these ends, it's our job to alter or abolish those governments. Well, at very least, we've got to do some major altering here. I would suggest that our military has been a rogue agency for all our lives, that the American people never voted to become the world's empire, to conquer all these other countries and steal their resources and to, kill them covertly with all these CIA operations. Read the former State Department William Blum's book, Killing Hope, CIA interventions around the world, and the rogue state, which really refers to the United States and Israel. I mean, our history is so evil and draconian, the Vietnam War being an example of, 58,000 Americans were killed in an 11-year period. That's terrible. Well, 2 to 3 million Southeast Asians were killed, and not just in Vietnam, but Cambodia and Laos. And you mentioned Douglas Valentine's book, The CIA's Organized Crime, Tim, and you also did a very nice interview with him, which I heard online. Doug Valentine really, 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 really gets the big picture. I recommend that book to everybody. 2017, The CIA as Organized Crime, how Covert Operations Corrupt America and the World. And he gets the big picture. But, he still doesn't know what happened on 9/11, obviously. Or if he does, he's sidestepping it, where I've got a whole huge website devoted to what happened on 9/11 and how it fits into the big scheme. So I have not I've got, probably 50 books worth of material on my websites. I have elected, rather than writing a book and being an expert in this subject, to keep going and uncover different aspects of this hideous monster that has been created. And I'm glad I did that, because if I had stopped and written a book about how global warming is a fraud and climate change is cyclically, okay, that might have, done a little good. But I never would have got onto this subject, which is, you know, we loosely call gang stalking, PSYOP, electronic warfare, targeting of civilians. This is very important. This is really important.
Could you explain how this is implemented? You did a good, you've done a very good explanation how this is implemented, kind of the nuts and bolts through sort of a, they're thinking globally, but they're acting locally. And they do this through DHS grants through police departments, neighborhood watch programs, these sort of benign things people think. How easily these things can be weaponized. Want to go into that a little bit to make it kind of demystify this for people?
Yeah, you know, again, go to my websites on this, mygangstalking.com, look under, you know, gangstalking, look under directed energy weapons, go to my 911nwo.com site, look under directed energy weapons, and elsewhere. Yeah, I've got videos, I've got transcriptions of videos, I've got summaries of books, I've got, you know, I pulled together resources from many, many sources. And one video that I actually transcribed was just a, you know, average guy saying, you know, here's how DHS does it. What they do is they have lots of grant money. DHS gets, I don't know, $40, $50 billion a year in their budget, has 225,000 employees. And they do the fusion centers, which coordinate, you know, the civilian aspects, the neighborhood watch, the people who are kind of vigilante cop wannabes, you know, who think they're out there. Helping the police, and the police, you know, give them that impression. Well, this is not an investigation yet. This is a preliminary investigation, but we have a suspect of interest. And then they, of course, tell the neighborhood watch people that this person is a pedophile or a prostitute or something, you know, does something really bad. So they defame them, and then they get them to do these little harassment things. Well, not only that, but DHS spreads these grants around to first responders, to firefighters, to police departments, to, you know, ambulance drivers who are kind of often, you know, idle. Well, this gives them something to do and brings in some money. So now they think they're helping, you know, in this larger cause to beat terrorism or whatever. To help the police get the bad guys, and the bad guys are among us, and but in fact, the bad guys are the good guys. So that, you know, so what you have is this complete flip flop, where the average citizen has been turned into a criminal, maybe inadvertently, but they've got to know eventually that what they're doing is, you know, they're depriving their fellow citizens of Fourth and Fifth and First Amendment rights. They themselves are involved in a program which is, I'm convinced, very deeply satanic. A lot of mind control in this, and that eventually goes back to the satanic aspects that we had talked about earlier. The DHS is coordinating in the fusion centers all these civilian groups, Neighborhood Watch, and all of this, of course, got ramped up on steroids after 9/11. And if you look through, you know, the laws that were passed through our government, often ramrodded right after 9/11, through Congress and elsewhere, and executive orders here and there, I mean, all of this set it up. So we're not just dealing with rogue agencies. We're not just dealing with a rogue military. We're not just dealing with rogue DHS, FBI, CIA, civilian. We're dealing with a whole governmental structure. Which has, I think, been commandeered. So you can look at the, say, 9/11 as one of a series of coups. I think this coup was particularly against the American people, because I think the coup of Kennedy assassination was they got the government back then, you know, in a lot of ways. But 9/11 just put the whole thing on steroids. And of course, in the position papers that the PNAC, the Project for New American Century, in a paper called Rebuilding America's Defenses, they said, well, we've got to double the defense budget, and it's going to be very difficult to do this in the absence of a catalyzing event such as a new Pearl Harbor. Okay, this came out in the year 2000, and it was written by these neoconservative Jews or dual citizen American Israelis. You know, including Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld and Jeb Bush and Dick Cheney and Faith and Ludi, and you know the names, go right on down the list of these people. There's, you know, there's 30 of them, and they more or less, you know, were able to just derail the whole government and put it on this track. As Webster Tarpley says, you know, this was a coup d'etat. and Webster Tarpley being somebody I'm sure you're familiar with, who's written a book called 911 Synthetic Terror Made in the USA. His fifth edition demonstrates from news reports that there were 46 drills on the day of 9/11 and leading up to it, you know, run by the Air Force and the military and NATO and the UN and whatnot, that mimicked all aspects of the 9/11 operation. Well, you know, it's easy enough to, you just turn these drills and make them go live, you know, and this is exactly how they do it. It's what they did with the 7/7 bombings in London. This is what they, you know, would do with so many of these false flag terror events, which again are made in the USA. They are, you know, using mind control for gang stalking techniques. The guy who shot up the naval yard had a rifle that had carved on his barrel, "This is my ELF weapon." Well, ELF he's referring to is extremely low frequencies, you know, radio waves that have tormented him, tortured him. They can put voices in your skull. They can drive you crazy. And that's what they do. And so a lot of these shooters then would be victims of these very, very high technologies that the military controls. But not only the military farms them out, as you say, to private groups now, with executive order, what is it, under Reagan, 123333, they basically in the 80s said, okay, COINTELPRO is legal, number one, and number two, federal agencies can outsource their work to private agencies. So now we have InfraGuard doing the work of the FBI and targeting these individuals with ex-FBI agents that are running them. So they would have been trained with then they would double or triple their salaries by going over to the private sector and doing the same thing, and then the government's off the hook. So now, again, we have this public-private partnerships, and we have these citizen military operations. So this thing has turned into Frankenstein's monster. And yet, you know, I would suspect that, you know, 90%, 95% of the American people have no clue that this is going on right under their noses. It's got to change.
Yeah, and obviously with high unemployment, it's easy to always get people willing to do this stuff for money, especially if you infuse it with patriotic, you know, purposes, or, you know, fighting evildoers or something. You're doing it for your country. Do it for your country.
Yes.
No. And not, there's always also
this is a very good point.
Yeah. And not, of course, there's always a reliable supply of just sort of, you know, the people who egomaniacs or psychopaths who simply like, you know, pushing people around or intimidating people or spying on people. You know, it beats working in a factory if there's still a factory in your town. You know,
you got it. Yeah, you know, and like when I think it was Karen Stewart, ex-FBI, who's now a TI, whistleblower and then a TI. And there's some very good YouTubes of Karen Stewart being interviewed on these things. And she says, well, they drill down into a criminal class, an unemployed criminal class. And they, you know, so the citizens would be participating on a part-time basis and getting paid, or on a full-time basis and getting paid, or simply as a volunteer basis, and all combinations thereof. Now, if you go on to Karen's YouTube, she, you know, ex-NSA person herself, very smart, you know, with some, you know, savvy, as she would confront her perpetrators, her stalkers, and say, well, are you getting paid for this? And apparently one or two of them would, you know, fess up and say, yeah, I get $100, you know, every time I look at my iPhone app and I see your picture, you know, on the list of pictures, and then I call in the location and the time that I see you, and I get $100 marked to my account from X agency, you know, be the FBI, could be the NSA, could be the DHS. And then another YouTube is of a street preacher getting on the YouTube and confronting a great big chubby guy in a store, grocery store, and saying, you know, are you getting paid to stalk me, you know? And the guy says, yeah, I'm a GS-12. Well, I don't know if you know anything about the GS pay scale of the government service, but GS-12s make a lot of money. So if that's the case, then this guy's professional. He harasses and targets and spies on his neighbors as making good money. So here we are as a country. We've outsourced manufacturing and an industry. And now we're living off, you know, Hollywood and information and high tech. And now we have another major sector of our economy which is the national security one. So you too can be a total rat fink psychopath asshole and spy on your fellow human being. I have to work with myself not to have too much contempt for them, because of course a lot of them are, you know, what Lenin would call useful idiots. You know, these people are duped. But yet what they're doing, you know, the fightgangstalking.com refers to these people as brown nosers, cockroaches, sewer rats. You can call them all kinds of things, but what they're doing, they're scumbags. I mean, they're rats. They're ratting on their fellow Americans, and they're torturing them. Now, again, this, all this being coordinated from say these fusion centers and these fourth generation warfare mobile, what they call four CISR. Now that's 4C for command and control, communications and computers. So you can have in your community either virtual 4CISR operations, that is to say, it's a command and control situation where somebody is commanding the various nodes, they'll use that term, nodes, of individuals to say, do a battle swarm or a swarm against a targeted individual. So somehow this mobile 4CISR unit, which the Army has one, has its version, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, they all have their versions of the 4CISR technology, which allows them to go into your community, which is now the battle space, and coordinate all these perpetrators to do these gang stalking operations, these the street theater and harassing things, again, using very sophisticated PSYOP technologies, which have been around for a long time. So this is how they do it. And if you go onto my website and look under the bestiary of terms, I mean, I take this right out of Mark Rich's book, New World War Method of Control. Things are defined. And when you start to go through this bestiary of acronyms and alphabet soup terms, I mean, there it is. It's laid out. This is their unconventional warfare, their irregular warfare against the civilian population of the world. Yeah. And to have our military involved at this level in targeting citizens of the world is so repugnant and disgraceful and pathetic that this has to be exposed to him, and it has to be eradicated, because people are being tortured to death as we speak. And their neighbors are not even seeing it. Their neighbors may be doing it, thinking that they're doing a service to neutralize their neighbor who is this bad guy, you know. But it's not a bad guy, you know. It's probably, you know, a totally innocent civilian who's trying to lead a decent life, you know.
Well, I'm trying to figure who might be a target of this stuff, because you mentioned yourself. The academic community has to be controlled. It has been controlled. And those people who are among, you know, the PhD, people who've earned PhDs, they have their bona fides. And they come out and they speak out against the system, or they call out 9/11, or they call out the financial fraud behind the crash of 2008 in Wall Street. They can be particularly dangerous because they have credibility with the general public. They speak up against us. I'm thinking of the case of, I think her name was Catherine Horton, the Hungarian.
Yes.
I guess she's ethnic, yes, German-Hungarian. And she got I listened to her talk, and she's very, I mean, obviously when you're hearing people claim these things, most people are going to say, well, this person's paranoid, schizophrenic, they're imagining things. But the system's designed to look that way. That's the whole idea of plausible deniability, right? But she got targeted, according to her testimony, because she was looking into the crash of 2008 and all the fraud and chicanery that involved, and all the looting that took place. And that shows you that she wasn't addressing 9/11 specifically, but she was addressing something, financial matters and the fraudulent banking system. And that's why she says she was targeted, because of her work in that.
Yes, and you know, it's good you brought her up. I mean, she's got a website, I think stop007.org, mm-hmm, or something like that. And in her experience, it is the British intelligence. She's, I think, or somewhere in Oxford. She's Oxford trained and is a physicist and worked at CERN. So this is a very high-powered, smart lady, mm-hmm, and she's using all of her, and she's young, she's using all of her strength and energy to coordinate and to combat this and figure out how to do so. So I've been in touch with her and vice versa. Apparently, it was one of my interviews, I'm told, with the Pinecone Utopia World Beyond Belief, helped her realize that's what was happening to her. Because, you know, even if you're really smart, all you know is your world's getting turned upside down and you don't know why. So you're in this hellish situation of being targeted without knowing who or why you're being targeted, who's doing it and why. And anyway, yeah, Catherine Horton is one of these people who is certainly a high bona fides and who was looking into the economic system of Britain. And of course, that's a no-no, you know. She was looking at it. She just wanted to look at it from a systems point of view to kind of help the world, you know. Well, you know, I used to have a class called Human Ecology at Cal State University, Stanislaus, where I taught. And for 20 years, I taught that course. And I would show a movie of called Who's Globalization, put out by a Global Exchange. Dr. Kevin Danaher, political science PhD, you know, said, hey, globalization can work for the elite or can work for the masses. You know, mm-hmm. It just depends on kind of who's controlling the power. And he had a statement in there, which I connect with. He says, those of us who are, you know, privileged enough to have access to a college education are always in a contradictory class position because we can either choose to serve the elite or to choose the majority. So somebody like Catherine Horton and myself, you know, I mm-hmm. guess it's our instinct, and yourself for sure, it's our instinct to try to serve the majority. You know, in other words, you use whatever tools you can to help others. And whereas, you know, the elite, the guys, you know, the John Alexanders and the Michael Aquinos, who, you know, who go over into the dark side, would really be serving Big Brother and you know, protecting the haves from the have-nots. So really that's what it comes down to. And then we have the great unwashed majority, 90-95%, who are, you know, kind of in their little bubble of don't bother me, I don't want to know. Because I've got a lot on my plate. Well, I'm sorry. You know, you just got to wake up, you know, if you want to keep your country.
You got to.
People are going to have to
stop watching the shadows on the wall, and you know, and that's most people are cave dwellers.
Pardon me.
Most people are cave dwellers. They're watching the shadows on the wall, and they're not. And they don't want to be disturbed from the show. And
yes.
And it's a hard thing to wake up from, you know. That was interesting because, again, I guess people like yourself and Dr. Horton, they're considered dangerous. You are considered dangerous people. You're an enemy of the state, so to speak, of the corporate state, because you have the brain power, the expertise, and the credibility to apply some real, you know, sharp, cogent criticism and get it out there, particularly get it out there with the internet. And that's why her analysis was interesting because she's systems analyst. She's into system analysis, and she applied it to how this system. In the interview I heard her talk, she's talking how the system was developed in the first place. And it's all very rational if you think about it, how you can, you know, through creation of certain systems and networks, you can maximize effectiveness. And, you know, and that's what's been done here. And you can see that with the development, not only of the various alphabet soup agencies, but then the executive orders supposedly privatizing these things to corporations, and they have the revolving door. People can double dip, and they all the experience, and it seems all private. And this allows the agencies themselves to have a plausible deniability, to do it at an arm's length, so they'll never really guilty of anything. But the objective is still being achieved. You can still see it in the manipulation of media and entertainment and music. It's the same thing, and the idea of psychological warfare. I'm reading Christopher Simpson's book, The Science of Coercion. And it deals with the development of psychological warfare doctrine roughly 1945 to 1960. And it really picked up after the passage of the National Security Act in 1947. And initially, he says, what happened was, one thing is, in World War I, we had the American Protective League, where you could see that was a form of gang stalking, going on harassing people for not being appropriately patriotic or supportive of the America's entry into World War I. But what you had like the Creel Committee and the Committee for Public Information that employed Bernays and people like Walter Lippmann. And they're involved in, you know, producing propaganda, literature, news reports to support the war effort. But the thing about after World War I, it was dissolved. And up until entry into World War II was privatized through the Rockefeller Foundation, you know, the Princeton Radio Project, and putting on the War of the Worlds broadcast. All of us, they were intently interested in mass communication and mass manipulation. But after World War II, it was institutionalized under Eisenhower, and the creation of the national security state, the sort of this cryptocracy was created, the military-industrial complex, also this cryptocracy, where all these institutions became, these agencies, or the idea of psychological warfare became institutionalized under the guise of the Cold War. And it branched out, of course, a lot of people who were doing who were involved in propaganda during the Second World War, people like William Perley, Sarnoff, and all that, they branched out into the media, into the mainstream media, the newspapers, and this allowed Mockingbird to be possible. Frank Wisner's so-called, you know, Mighty Wurlitzer, this mass media attempt to manipulate the whole society, all through this networking system that that I think Catherine Horton was talking about. It's all networking, you know.
Yeah, you know, you brought up Mockingbird, and of course that's one of the CIA operations that was exposed at the Church Committee hearings, Senate hearings in the mid-70s. Yeah, it was back in the 50s and 60s where the CIA essentially, you know, gained control of all the influential newspapers and reporters of note. But, you know, this had all been done under J.P. Morgan as well, you know, pre-CIA. You know, with the Council on Foreign Relations and whatnot. And what I've discovered, Tim, in looking at, you know, the career of Alan Dulles, and I've got a long extended article which kind of tracks his career from, you know, right around the close of World War One, when he was with Colonel Edward House, Mendel House, and his brother, John Foster Dulles, one of the co-founders of the CFR, 1921. And you know, authors of the Treaty of Versailles would set up World War II, and who guaranteed that Hitler would pay back the Wall Street loans in 1933, you know, thus setting up World War II. And then towards the end of his career, of course, being fired by Kennedy for the Bay of Pigs, because he had essentially controlled American foreign domestic policy under Eisenhower, and he just kept doing that even when young John F. Kennedy assumed office in 1960-61. And then when Kennedy tried to actually exert control over the presidency and pull out of Vietnam, and he had made the statement, we need to, you know, break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. Well, you know, he fired Alan Dulles in 1960. And after the Bay of Pigs, and a couple years later, Alan Dulles, even in as an ex officio head of the CIA, I think he probably was very influential in coordinating the assassination of Kennedy. So you have this connection then between the CFR, which of course traces back to the, you know, roundtable groups in Britain, as the American branch of the RIIA, Royal Institute of International Affairs of Britain.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically the Wall Street City of London, you know, the money power, and which basically Jewish. And so always then, when Dulles bragged that he had actually controlled Dwight D. Eisenhower when he was president, who's a five-star general. And then when Kennedy came along, of course, and tried to take control of the presidency, he was publicly executed in a very, you know, symbolic, dramatic way. And you know, though the killers have never been identified, and it is this power structure. So, yeah, Mockingbird, all of this stuff, we had a prototype back under the Dulles years. Alan Dulles would have signed MK Ultra operation mind control experiments into existence in 1953 when he assumed power over the CIA. So, yeah, the mind control, the covert operations, the destabilization of other countries. This is what Alan Dulles was all about. He was a Wall Street lawyer with his brother, John Foster Dulles, for Sullivan and Cromwell, which is the most, you know, premier Wall Street legal firm for the Rockefellers, et cetera. And if you go into, you started with the PSYOP thing. It's funny how these things keep coming back around to the, you know, there's like a big circle. The PSYOP research that was done in the right after World War II was funded largely by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, these various subversive organizations who hired psychologists and sociologists and anthropologists right after World War II, and we get into the Macy conferences. You know, this stuff has so much history to it, and I'm so gratified to hear that you know it. You know, this is what they don't teach in college.
No.
So you have to work your butt off. You have to work your butt off to get up to speed on this stuff. You have to read widely. You have to read out of the box. But then, you know, all these textbooks need to be revised because this is the important part, which is being left out of people's education.
Yes. It's there's a whole secret history to our world that people never learn. The involvement of secret societies, criminal organizations, malfeasance. Just, you know, you don't, when you're learning political science, you learn, you know, the basics like civics, which is, you know, a skeletal representation of how the system works, but you never get the flesh and blood of the system, which really is high criminality,
yes,
bribery, drug trafficking, fraud, child trafficking. It's all very dark. It's all very blue. So no one wants to really take a look at it because it will disturb their little world, you know? So, you know,
I can say that a friend of mine, one of my university professor's daughters, just graduated from a UC system in California with a degree in political science. And you know, I mean, there is a heavy emphasis on Machiavelli, you know, in political science. So, you know, they would, and she actually said something, well, you have to sell your soul, you know, to be even to do this, you know, because I guess that, you know, they get steeped in Machiavelli, you know, the ends justify the means, or might makes right, and, you know, divide and conquer, and, you know, you have to deceive the population with simple lies, always the cover stories of the CIA substituting for the reality. Well, you know, once you're, you know, attuned to that, to realize that our media is giving us the cover stories, and that, you know, behind the cover stories, there is the story behind the story, the real story, that serves the power structure and that is being advanced by our propagandists, then you start to, you know, again, put together the more accurate worldview, if you can be bothered to to go there. You know, and who was it I was hearing recently? A guy named Don Jeffrey was being interviewed about hidden history by Tex Mars in this week's program of Power of Prophecy. And he says most people just want a kind of a normalized view of the world, you know, with good people and bad people and a few bad apples in government. But they don't want to deal with the pervasive criminal nature, you know, the fact that the Pizzagates are, you know, connected to the Franklin cover-up and you know, all these pedophile rings and drug trafficking and child trafficking and sex trafficking, and that this is business as usual for the power elite. This is what happened and fixed.
It's key if you understand.
Yeah, go ahead.
These things, are whether it's child trafficking, drug trafficking, how it relates to controlling the entire system, they're into full spectrum dominance, and they're not going to allow for the black markets to operate independently. In fact, the operation of the black markets are key to controlling the entire system, because blackmail and bribery are key to controlling what little oversight we may have to the political process, and it's also key to controlling people's. It's key to perception management, and that's the key. That all goes back to the allegory of the cave. It's all perception management. And just something as dark as child trafficking, whereas why would the intelligence agencies be involved in something like that? Well, if there's an intelligence value to it, they'll do it, and they have done it. It's been documented, you know, and that's why everywhere you go, there's a war. There's people to be, there's human beings to be harvested, whether it's labor. And that could be, you could construe, sex trafficking as labor. You can go into a country, destabilize it, and buy it up on the cheap. And if you can socialize the cost of the destabilization, is what the CIA and DOD are really all about. It's about making the taxpayers pay for all the fighting and all the destruction, and then for the rebuilding. And you're getting, you know, if you work for Bechtel or Halliburton, you're making the money off that, off everyone's blood and treasure. Everyone else, it's always, the key is making someone else's blood, spilling someone else's blood and spending someone else's treasure to make your money. And that's how the system is designed. The banking system, the corporate system, and that's what people don't get. And the child trafficking and the drug trafficking are all part of it. So, you know, that's all part of it. That's the big picture. That's what
Yeah.
You know. So, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things that I like about Mark Rich's book, you know, he talks a lot about psychopaths as being almost another species. You know, 4%, they say, of the population are psychopathic. They don't have a conscience. And they know that they're different from others. They're actually pretending to have the same emotions that humans do, that the rest of us do. But they don't. Here's what he says, and I quote this. In my bestiary of terms, he says, front groups for the British Crown and Wall Street are actively pursuing plans for global domination. Aggressive efforts are now underway to remove existing freedoms. As they consolidate control of the planet, they have extended the battlefield into your neighborhoods. Their primary enemies are those resisting their political agenda, all of whom will be identified, isolated, and destroyed. An inclusion of the pathological factor, however, suggests that a more general class of people who are considered their natural enemies will be attacked as well. And we can assume that, you know, just good people or Christians or whatever. Evidence suggests that the U.S. government has been entirely overthrown by a network of groups exhibiting psychopathic traits that have disguised themselves using humanitarian fronts. They are facilitating a revolution which will result in them having control of the entire planet. Again, the Jewish utopia thing. Using the multinational force, they are waging a worldwide war against civilians to accomplish this. And see, this is what must be known widely ASAP. In order to maintain a dictatorship, it is absolutely critical that control is established on the neighborhood level. In the U.S., this network has existed since 1917, World War I, and has been used to harass and spy on people that have been labeled subversive, okay, or adversaries, or, you know, whatever, insurgents. It is now entirely fused into our society, just as it was in East Germany and Communist Russia. It is no exaggeration to say that the Anglo-American establishment, animated, I would suggest, again, by the Judeo-Masonic Satanists, is using the military to reach down into your neighborhood, single people out, and silently torture them while using the mental health system, Congress, media, and NGOs to conceal their attacks. Now, see, that's a whole nother topic, Tim, is the cover-up, which, again, gets into the whole field of psychiatry and psychology and the use of terms like schizophrenia and paranoid schizophrenia, delusional disorder, to actually institutionalize people who are being targeted. Their utopia is only possible when the enemy is removed. A portion of the population is recruited to assist in accomplishing that. Directed energy weapons, including microwaves, lasers, and acoustic frequencies, will be used on the enemy. And this is all in the military documents, so it's thoroughly integrated into our military forces. PSYOP attacks are transmitted through every possible channel of communication that the TA, targeted audience, uses. It would be the ultimate dream for any average psychopath to be able to use the resources of the state to place people under surveillance, torture them from a safe distance with no evidence of their use, and sit back and have a good laugh while they watch them suffer in real time. And here, of course, you can recall that Cheney and George W. Bush were actually watching movies of the torture at Abu Ghraib that was carried out against the Muslims. And we're talking, you know, all kinds of sexual degradation, etc. So these people really are psychopaths, and people need to understand that. It would be better if they controlled the very institutions which proclaim to exist to expose such activities. And again, you know, the do-gooding institutions would turn on somebody. If I were to go, say, to a psychologist or even to a police officer and tell them, you know, my experiences or my symptoms, you know, it would not be that hard for say, oh, I think you need a psychiatric evaluation. You sound crazy, you know. And then, of course, they can institutionalize you and throw away the key, like as in, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or another books like that. Or they could simply lock you up. And that's what they want to do. They want to get you out of circulation. They want to get you dead. They want to get you to kill yourself. They want to get you out on the street where they can really work on you. They want to get you out of your job, out of your home, out of your relationships. They isolate you, deprive you of sleep, deprive you of social contact. It's war using any means necessary to neutralize Centralized individuals. And then going back, that's my words, going back to Rich, their widespread, systematic, consistent, vile activities, which have spanned multiple realms over the course of decades and have been committed against the human race in general, would be considered a crime against humanity in any civilization run by decent people. I think that's pretty good, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's, well, one thing is, yeah, to point out is that any student of history knows that these things have occurred throughout our past. We have, I think, going back to World War One with the American Protective League, and these, they go and harass people who weren't supporting the war. You have the MK Ultra, of course. This 240 separate programs included all types of horrible experimentation and harassment. You know, the drugging of people, that was George Hunter White and his Operation Midnight Climax. The mass dosing of society. The promotion of drugs, the facilitation of the drug trade through the by the intelligence agencies, whether in Afghanistan, Vietnam, or Central America, to help carry out their various programs there, dirty wars and such. What people don't fail to realize, they see these things as sort of episodic events, not as a progression or a serial event. So these things are related, you know. And so that's what I think what that book does is these things have been going on for decades. Now they're just being refined, and the technology has reached a point where now they can really do these things and avoid all accountability. It's scary.
Yes, yes, and yet we have this tool of the internet, you know, yeah. And you and I can converse. I'm in Baja, you're in the DC area, and you can put this podcast out that can be heard in, you know. Anywhere, you know, Argentina, whatever. And so, you know, Paul Marco of the World Beyond Belief would say, well, we're in the period of the great unveiling. So in a sense, you know, they're being exposed now. But, you know, having now studied the occult a little bit, say the Masonic system, which, of course, based on the Jewish Talmud and Kabbalah, and all the degrees are based on the Jewish black magic. It's their belief that if they tell you what they're going to do and then they do it, they're absolved of guilt. So, and this is why Michael Hoffman, you know, of secret societies and psychological warfare would say that the third phase is the, you know, the revelation of the method, that they actually want this stuff to come out, because if it's known and people still don't do anything about it, then the mind control is twice as severe. So our response is, well, okay, we're going to learn about it and we have to do something about it. It's like, okay, with the knowledge comes the responsibility to act on that knowledge and to fight those injustices, you know. So I'm just kind of throwing in the good news is, yeah, the good news is it's the great unveiling. The bad news is from the point of view of the occult elite, the revelation of the method is what they want. So we have to be careful that this unveiling results in, you know, positive change. And I think Catherine Horton is working really hard on that with a lot of TIs, targeted individuals. And I bet you could get her on your show, you know, and get her take and her story. As well as some of the others, you know, like Karen Stewart and whatnot. These are very, very smart, credible people. And they're not dead. They're alive and kicking, and they are being tortured. But it's slow kill. It's soft kill. It's silent kill. It's non-lethal weapons. It's PSYOP. It's electronic warfare. So it's a different kind of war.
I mean, look what happened to the German editor, Uwe Oltkopf, who had a heart attack. He's one that, he spoke about the CIA's control of the German media, how he worked for the CIA planting stories. And he just died of a heart attack last month.
At
age 55, 56, I think.
Right.
That might be a case, another case there. It's, you know, he died, you know, that's, you know, people in the 50s do die of heart attacks, but it is curious to say the least. But, you know, yeah, you're right. Now, I mean, it's one of these things, your revelation of the method is, because we have things like Bradley Manning, his revelations with the Iraq is being gunned down by the gunship. You have Snowden's revelations, these things. And you have also the Abu Ghraib leaks, these things. These things, I think, were, I mean, you could look at these things as sort of controlled leaks to do that very thing, to to release this information out there to condition us to accept total surveillance, to accept atrocities and these things, and nothing's done about them. And that's a good that's could be an example of Hoffman's revelation of the method there.
So we have to make sure that that doesn't happen. One of the recent posts I have, Tim, is called Synonyms for the Phoenix Program. And again, this is, you could look at this as a globalized Phoenix Program. Even, you know, David Kilcullen suggested that this is what should be done around the world to maintain American hegemony. Here are some of the synonyms that come out of Douglas Valentine's book about the CIA as organized crime, about the Phoenix Program by the people involved. Sergeant Ed Murphy called it the bounty hunting program. So, you know, again, that is the gang stalking is the modern term, but it's not a very good term. So let's kind of modulate that with some other synonyms here. An attempt to eliminate the opposition, political warfare, psychological warfare, deniable population control, death squad operations, because the Phoenix program morphed then into the death squads operations in Central America in the 80s, and then in the death squad operations in Afghanistan and Iraq in this present, you know, 21st century. Hunter killer teams, and this would be, you know, Bob Kerry and John Kerry would have been involved in this hunter killer teams. Mille massacre would be an example. Political mass murder be another term. Political neutralization warfare. Highly bureaucratic system to dispense anyone or thing that cannot be, and I love this, ideologically assimilated. So we're supposed to be ideologically assimilated, Tim, or else. Death lists is another synonym. Targeting the civilian infrastructure of the Viet Cong is another synonym. Greatest blackmail scheme ever invented is another one. Programmed to terrify the civilian population into submission. And you just mentioned this guy being killed in Germany. Well, of course, that has a chilling effect, you know. Well, maybe I better not do anything like that, you know, or else same thing could happen to me. So people are going to have a certain amount of courage to step up. Unstated policy, murdering civilians for the Phoenix program. Intentional corruption of collaborating officials using drug trafficking, etc., which is now going on, I'm sure, all over the world. A pacification program is another term they use for the Phoenix program. You pacify the population. At one point, they had a quota system of 1,800 neutralizations per month in Vietnam. And in July 15th, 1971, it was reported that 26,843 Vietnamese civilians, non-military Viet Cong insurgents and sympathizers, were quote-unquote neutralized in the previous 14 months. And they, of course, used the CIA set up national interrogation centers and provincial interrogation centers in all the provinces, which in fact were torture centers. So unless people do stand up, like you and me and Catherine Horton and others, I think we can kind of expect to see the same thing in America and worldwide. These people, you know, just, you know, doing it incrementally. But this is obviously where they want to take it. If they're going to globalize the Phoenix program, we have to understand what the Phoenix program was and how very evil it was. And this, where we owe Doug Valentine a debt of gratitude. He's got a whole book called The Phoenix Program, and he talks about it in his other book about the CIA as organized crime as well.
Yes, we have to realize that we are all now Vietnamese peasants.
So. Yes, exactly. You know, yes. And
the empire comes home. So
the empire comes home, exactly. And we see this in so many ways, you know, the IMF and the World Bank with their structural adjustment programs in third world countries, you know, to go ahead and privatize all publicly held assets that they want long extended. Well, you know, the world, you know, financial Rothschild-controlled financial system has America at trillions of dollars. Well, how are you going to get out of debt? Well, you're going to have these structural adjustment programs. You're going to have to privatize this, privatize that, sell off your national parks, sell off your forest service, do whatever, you know, sell off your public utilities to private, you know, to the corporatocracy, which, of course, is one face of this. And it's the American empire comes home, turns on its own self. But then we have this wild card, Donald Trump, who got elected on a platform of nationalizing, our own interests, you know, and moving us away from this globalized monster. So we'll see. Maybe he can do a little good, even though he's got his Jewish billionaire or his billionaire buddies in his cabinet position. Who knows? You know, I'm crossing my fingers. There might be some daylight. To tell you the truth, Tim, I think the United States is in the same position now as Germany was in the 30s. Judea had declared war on Germany in 1934, brought it to its knees by an economic boycott. That's before the state of Israel was created. But they realized they needed a strong man like Hitler in power in Germany to go ahead and do World War II for them so they could, you know, drive the Jews out of Europe and into Palestine, and so that they could have this, you know, very profitable war that killed, you know, whatever, 60, 70 million people worldwide. So they had to resuscitate Germany for a little longer.
Yeah, the vast majority of whom were not Jewish, by the way, the victims of World War II.
Pardon me?
The vast majority of victims of World War II were not Jewish.
That's right. Oh, absolutely. Of course, and neither were the people killed by the Soviet system and the Chinese communists. You know, if you look at the victims of war, or if you looked at the killed people killed in the 20th century, the people killed by their own governments far outnumbers the people that were killed during, you know, major wars. So if you get these police state governments, their ability to kill their own people is phenomenally draconian. 66 million mostly white Christians in Soviet Union killed under that system, and probably over 100 million Chinese killed under the Chinese communist. And who knows how many would be killed in America under a, you know, a system in which the neocon types have absolute control. Because this, you know, apparently, the satanic occult worldview calls for, you know, lots of death and destruction. They're doing a holocaust or a burnt offering toward their true God, which I'm afraid is the Holy Serpent. And this is brought out by Tex Mars's book, The Holy Serpent. As I can't remember exactly the title or in the subtitle of the book, but the Jewish Holy Serpent and how the rabbis are expecting Satan to help them establish their universal Jewish empire on the earth, you know, and so, you know, you go into their own belief systems. Yes, they don't worship the God of the Old Testament. They worship Satan. And part of the deal is just like the deal that Satan offered Jesus. You know, we'll give you all the kingdoms of the world if you just bow down and worship me. Well, Jesus rejected the deal, but on the other hand, that particular group and others have taken the deal. We want short-term wealth and privilege and, you know, whatever it is we want it now, and Satan will give it to them. And then, of course, they pay ultimately with eternal perdition. You know, I think it's a terrible deal. I think people are stupid who make that deal, but apparently that is available, and a lot of our leaders have made the deal.
Evidently.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I said, if we are Weimar Germany, or Germany's in the 30s, you have to be careful about the reaction, because dialectics are a bitch. And I think what's hard for people to understand about that phase of history was that the important function that the Third Reich played in the ultimate Zionist scheme.
Yes.
That, you know, and so the action is in the reaction. And that's what we have to be careful about. And how we respond to these things, you know, you don't want to take the bait.
And that's, well, yes, exactly. I think that's an excellent point, Tim. And here we are. I think we're in a terrible double bind. And you know, it was the Macy conferences of the 40s and 50s, you know, with Gregory Bateson and Margaret Mead and all those, you know, big intellectuals. Gregory Bateson did so much of his research on the double bind. And on schizophrenia, which is really kind of a trumped up disease to be used against, you know, people who are targeted, you know, and yeah, complain of these crazy symptoms. But a double bind has been described as a baited mouse trap where, you know, you there's a no-win situation. So if you and I, you know, expose this and other people, and the U.S. government comes down and America is destroyed, well, you know, that's... That doesn't help us too much, you know, or doesn't help our neighbors. What we'd like to see is the Constitution and the New Testament perhaps re-established as the fundamental documents of our nation, you know, so that we become a decent society and a law-abiding society, and one that works for the benefit of the people, and that is controlled by, to a large extent, the people. But if, you know, if the whole system is rotten to the core, and we expose it, and the whole thing crashes, well, you know, Mark Emmerich would say this, Marshall Thomas, who wrote a great book called Monarch, The New Phoenix Program, he understood this back in 2007 and lays it out in his book. And he's also cited on my website and some of his YouTubes. He just lays it out. He says there is a global destabilization program going on designed to destroy all the nations of the world. Well, you know, if a country goes rotten to the point, say, East Germany, 1 in 6 civilian spies, that country can't survive. You know, the country destroys itself. And this is shown in the movie The Lives of Others, where, you know, you have all these, you know, civilian and professional Stasi spies destroying the lives of their fellow citizens. And after the, you know, the wall came down in Berlin and this East German government collapsed, all of these secret security records of all the citizens were opened up, and people in East Germany could see what the government had written about them. You know, all the spying that had been done, and see what was in their files. Well, all of that's going on, of course, in these in now the NSA's gigantic Utah data center. You know, they've got infinite number of files now on all of us in America, and of course now it's all digital. So in a sense, we're going down that road, and our challenge is to be to expose and correct the system without destroying the whole system. And of course, the people that are doing this system want to destroy our nation. So we somehow have to negotiate those tricky waters.
Yeah. Well, listen, Dr. Kosterman, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I think at this point, it's a good way to end it in this conversation.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add before I let you go? Is there anything else that you need to cover?
Well, I want to thank you very much, Tim. Your understanding is very impressive, and I enjoy these conversations. I would be glad to do another one, you know, in a month or two or whatever.
Yeah.
If you want to focus in more specifically on the PSYOP and the electronic warfare aspects of this, there is, you know, there's a lot of information there. Most of it, much of it is you know, secret, covert, but much of it now is also out there. And again, the nuts and bolts would be these very, very high-tech strategies that the military and others now employ against the domestic population that they are designating as enemies, insurgents, adversaries, etc. So if we want to do another one like that, I'm up for it. If you want to get Catherine Horton, Dr. Catherine Horton, to do an interview with you, I bet you she would be amenable. I'm just throwing that out as a possibility.
Okay.
And others
yeah.
in the
yeah.
TI community,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, I listened to her talk. It was very interesting. She's very credible. I mean, just listen to her talk. And is she easy to contact or?
Yes, and if you want, I'll share her email with you and maybe get that ball rolling. She's she's done some great YouTubes, and she would be you would really enjoy, I think, benefit from talking to her too.
Oh, good. And also, I don't have enough female guests on my show. Need to meet that quota.
Well, I'll give you two email addresses. Another lady is Ramola D, who is American but also of Indian extraction. She's got a great website. TheEverydayCitizen.com or something like that. Very informative. She's got many podcasts in which she interviews TIs. And so you get people, and she was an English professor at Georgetown, mm-hmm. A poet. And so you get these very, very credible people who really know something about the program and who themselves are targeted. You know, the learning curve goes up pretty fast.
Yeah.
So,
and there's one I want to point out is the someone said, why would they target somebody? Are you that important? Or I do think that there is a particular threat when someone with credentials, an education, and an ability to articulate comes out and writes a paper and is able to broadcast this. And, you know, whether a couple hundred here and there, that has a cumulative effect. You also, as we mentioned in our talk, it can appear rather random, like that case of Ms. Naylor, who just offended a sibling of someone who had connections, apparently. And she can be, under the pretext of a test subject, can be harassed as well. So it can, you know, when you have systems like this is what happens. Just like when you have these TSA or any police state, the abuse of that power can be for reasons of state. It can be for national security or because you're a threat to the system, or it could be just because someone covets your wife.
Absolutely. So that's, in fact, you know, there is a lady who's involved with a citizen group called PACTS, People Against Covert Terror and Surveillance, which is run by Derek Robinson, who's out in California. There's a woman that is his vice president. I've talked to her on the phone and by email, and they have these TI conference calls, that and other groups. And she's told me her story a little bit. Her husband was working with a aerospace firm, which obviously contracting with DOD. And apparently she had a nasty divorce with him, and they both wanted custody of their kids. And he put her in the program as a retaliation. So there she is, a lady who did not go to college, just a kind of a, you know, housewife, you know, very much involved in the kind of the mainstream of the culture. You know, getting her hair done and stuff like that, getting her nails done. And all of a sudden she's a victim of these kinds of programs. And so, you know, you can talk to her too. I can give you her email. These people, have to survive. They have to get wise fast, you know, and we have to help each other out.
Well, listen, Doctor, thanks for coming on the show again. I'll let you go. Enjoy some of your Saturday afternoon there. It sounds like, guess what? I guess it's breakfast shift there, right?
Yeah, but we're coming on noon here now. Okay. But yeah, it's been great to talk to you, Tim. Thanks so much for what you do. And I look forward to keeping the ball rolling with you at some point in the not too distant future.
Great. Well, listen, thanks a lot. And we'll talk again soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Whenever I need to leave it all behind, I feel the need to get away. I find a quiet place, far from the human race, out in the country. Before the breathing air is gone, before the sun is just a bright spot in the nighttime, out where the rivers like to run, I stand alone and take back something worth remembering. Whenever I feel them closing in on me, or need a bit of room to move, when life becomes too fast, I find relief at last, out in the country. Before the breathing air is gone, before the sun is just a bright spot in the nighttime, up where the rivers like to run, I stand alone and take back something worth remembering. Before the breathing air is gone, before the sun is just a bright spot in the nighttime, up where the rivers like to run, I stand alone and take back something worth remembering. Before the breathing